We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Culture Vigilante. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I promised, well, I tried not to talk about Ferguson tonight, but we're going to talk about it just a little bit before we get started tonight. We've got some other great things lined up for us later, but there's some things that happened this week that just can't go without mention. And I've got to tell you, it's a little embarrassing to be from the city where all of this is taking place and to watch the circus that has ensued from the left and the right and everything in between, and the behavior of people that we have put into elected office, people that are supposed to be leading the city, leading the nation, and the behavior and allowing this ridiculous situation to escalate into what it has become is just, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And to see what race relations has become, how it has done a complete 180 in my lifetime, where I grew up watching the race riots in my childhood, watching all of that go away, watching the whole nation come together. And then in the span of just a few short years in this last administration, how the race baiting and the racism on both sides has escalated to such a ridiculous degree, it's just mind-boggling for me to see how these kinds of things turn around. And to watching the events of this last week here in my city, in the St. Louis region, It's just been embarrassing. That's pretty much all I can say. It's just been an embarrassment. This week, the family of Michael Brown buried him, and the funeral was a political. What's the word? It was a political event. It was not a funeral. It was not a celebration of this young man's life for the family. It was just a ridiculous situation everywhere. Just every which way you looked at it. The White House sent three dignitaries to St. Louis to attend this funeral. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton were there. Several of the political hierarchy in Missouri were there, showed up. Claire McCaskill, Peter Kinder, all there to grab the spotlight, it was a place to be seen if you were a politician here in St. Louis. This week, it was ridiculous. It was a who's who of who could show up and who could mug for the camera, who could get in the headlines. Just amazing, you know. And I don't think either. I think, regardless of what side you're coming at it from, I think it's all ridiculous. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And to add insult to injury, because things aren't bad enough, you know, to add to the aura of entitlement that has swept the nation, that has probably been probably the most pervasive, destructive aspect of our culture, which lives so fervently in Ferguson, Missouri, that entitlement mentality. I saw an interview last week. Someone was interviewing two young black men in Ferguson, threatening, if you don't come in and rebuild our businesses that have burned down, there will be hell to pay. That's a quote. There will be hell to pay. Expecting the rest of us to come in and rebuild these businesses that have been burned down by the looters and the very thugs that have destroyed that city is absolutely ridiculous. But never fear, because we've been so politically corrected in this country that the aura of entitlement, the expectation of entitlement reigns, and the county of St. Louis yesterday has stepped up to come across and throw money at the problem, because we know throwing money at any problem always fixes it. And we have on with us tonight a gentleman, Pat Brennan. He's a patriot in the area. He's a member of Oath Keepers. Talked to him earlier today. He attended that city council meeting, or he tried to attend the city council meeting. They kind of did a switcheroo on the time on him. But if you're a concerned citizen, and you all should be concerned about this kind of situation, especially when the politicians are spending your money, go to these city council meetings and try to make your voices heard. Pat tried to attend the city council meeting, and to express his opinion, to offer his advice, to offer some fabulous ideas that he had for helping this situation turn itself around. And here's what he meant today. Pat, thanks for being with me today. I appreciate you coming on. I know you're busy and you've got other things going on. But I wanted you to come on today and talk about what you encountered in this city council meeting last night, or county council meeting yesterday.
Yeah, hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me. I was just it's a cultural nightmare what's happening there. You know, I heard this news Monday that they were considering an idea about throwing $1 million at the problem.
Yeah,
so,
$1 million.
So I went to what I thought was the meeting. I missed the time slot, but I wasn't very scared about it, because I knew that they initially told me that we were just going to kick around the idea and we'd have plenty of time for input on it. And so this morning I hear the news that they voted on it and passed it. Now, I directly contacted my council member, and they assured me that this was in the beginning stage of considering a bill, maybe, you know. And it blew my mind that they, and this is the way they do, and typically on all levels, they think that they know better than us. And I asked them, you know, we have other ideas, you know, and we need to take time and let the community voice in on this, and maybe we have... Maybe by chance somebody has a better idea than you, and maybe we have a better idea than throwing $1 million at it, because we all know when you get something you don't have to work for it, they don't value it. And my idea was, and it really frustrated me to no end, because they didn't even get to take it up. But how about, now my church just Saturday, we had a fundraiser and we raised $42,000. Now, what if we go through the community and help these guys in this community with the idea of having fundraisers, and now it's a twofold solution, because we're raising money to rebuild our own neighborhood, these people, mm-hmm. and now they get to work together, get that sense of community back, what they're lacking, and teach and show these kids that we can work together, do things and build things and be successful and be the American exceptionalism that we are. But instead, we're going to throw the money at it, and it's just appalling to me.
Well, you know, Pat, I watched some of the news coverage on it. I went through today and read up on it a little bit after we spoke, and the county council doesn't even know what they're throwing money at. They don't have any idea how this money is going to be spent. Is it going to go to businesses? Is it going to go to individuals? They have no allocation definition. They just threw $1,000 at Ferguson, and they don't even know what the money's going for.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important for us to, on every level really, but on the county level, to get involved into the county business and to make sure that they know that we're watching them. You know, I'm at a meeting right now, it's for the Center for Self-Governance, and we got to learn this system of who actually wields the power. The power is, it belongs in us individually. You know, when we get that idea back and restore that system properly, we can control these guys, because the charter, and I don't want to get totally off of the point, but in St. Louis County, it says in the first three paragraphs, the power belongs to the government, and that's so out of
proportion. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But so we got to relearn and get involved. It's so important.
Well, Pat, you and I were talking. Let's expand just a little bit for just a minute on this idea of private entities coming in to help this city rebuild. Because when the Twin Towers fell, millions upon millions of dollars from across the country went into that city. Private donations went into that city to help the families, to help all of the people there that needed some help. And I'm telling you, I mean, I know from personal experience, I know that there were caravans of law enforcement going across the river from the county that I live in to the county that the problem was in Ferguson, from all over all the surrounding counties in the St. Louis area were sending law enforcement in to help. And why is it so hard to believe that private entities couldn't get together and send aid into this small municipality to help it rebuild?
Well, that's the whole tragedy, that I'm just jumping in and doing it and rushing it in. Because, you know, and I don't have hard numbers, but I do know that the police officer and the victim, the community raised nearly $500,000 combined. And that was just in a matter of a few short days. Imagine if there was a community countywide effort, and it could even go statewide effort, for people to privately put money in and come and volunteer and help and who knows what, you know. And that's when I say it, American exceptionalism, you get the minds working and people come up with different ideas, and like you said, it's a spontaneous thing that would cover everything. But see, these guys want to get in there and they want to get their extra political muscles and say, hey, look what a great guy I am. I'm going to make sure we get it. It was a unanimous vote. Every single one of them county council members voted for it.
Yeah. I wonder how many of those folks attended the funeral, if they had the opportunity to mug for the cameras this week and they attended the Mike Brown funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what this whole situation has turned into. It's turned into a political circus for the politicians to get their their 30 seconds of political correctness and fame in, and they're not really doing anything to help the community at all.
No, and I tell you, I talked to my councilman's assistant, Sam Page, in the 2nd District in St. Louis County, and I told them, because of the way you behave, there's going to be repercussions. We're going to have a candidate to run against you in this next election, and we're going to take you out. And you know, everybody in St. Louis County, if you don't know who your council member is, it doesn't matter because everybody voted yes. So find out who your council member is, call them, and let them know that there's going to be repercussions for this. Because you know what? You bailed on us. You didn't even give us the ability to participate in this. And I'm not talking about the conversation about giving $1 million. I'm talking about to be able to participate in helping that community.
Right. Last week we had Bill Hennessy on from the St. Louis Tea Party. He took a group of folks down there for a boycott and to patronize the businesses there in that area. People are willing to help. People want to get involved and watch that community rebuild and regrow. And it doesn't have to happen through government. Well, Pat, I appreciate you coming on. I know that I pulled you out of another meeting, and I appreciate you putting this information out there on the social media today. I think it's a great idea. That's how these ideas grow and spread. Thank you for coming on and helping us out with that tonight.
Yeah, and you're welcome, Lisa, and you do a great job. Thank you for all you do, and it's because of people, individuals, that take a part in it. You know, at the end of the Declaration, they said, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. And we need to put more into the game, get skin into the game. And so you're doing a great job, and I'm going to keep fighting, and God bless America.
Thanks, Pat. Thank you. Say hello to everybody.
Hey, everybody in St. Louis, St. Charles, Missouri, keep up the fight, get involved, and I'll see you on Victory Day.
Okay. Good night. Thanks, Pat.
Bye.
We will talk a little bit more about this Ferguson issue. There's a few other developments and some things that you can do to help out and to make your voices heard and hopefully the way this whole situation is, it's about driving the message, folks. It's about one side trying to drive their agenda and the other side trying to drive their agenda. And all of this shapes your culture. And, you know, 50 years ago, none of this kind of thing would have been going on because we had a different culture. We had a different mindset. People were a little bit more respectful of each other. Authority figures had the respect for the people who for whom they worked and vice versa. So, you know, and Pat's right. It really is. We hold the power. It's up to you. You got to get involved and engaged if you want to drive that culture. We are going to move on, though, folks, because we have a great lineup for you tonight. We have a lot of stuff going on that this week is maybe not so political. A few weeks ago, if you listened to the show, you heard Mark Marshall, and we talked about a movie that was being made about the St. Louis area, Remembering the Sultana. Well, it seems that the Midwest is becoming a place very popular for movie makers, and there's a lot of talent here in the Midwest, which we're going to find out about. People coming from St. Louis, going to Hollywood, making movies. We've got another great situation coming up here in the St. Louis region. A Belleville filmmaker now living in Hollywood making small independent films. This is another great way, folks, for you to support an industry that can help to shape your culture. And this is all about you getting involved and engaged. When we come back, we're going to talk about that and meet some great folks in this independent film industry. Hold on, we'll be right back.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death!
We're back. This is Lisa Payne-Nager, and you are listening to Culture Vigilante. And we're not going to spend the entire evening talking about Ferguson. We have some other really important issues going on. This first segment, though, tonight is a lot of fun. And, you know, with all of the stuff that's been going on here in St. Louis, it's kind of fun and kind of refreshing to shift the focus from all the intensity of the political genre to something a little bit more culture-oriented, a little bit more family-oriented, a little bit more just, you know, the general flavor of the Midwest. It doesn't get portrayed in the media very much, films, television. But tonight we're happy to have with us Mr. Ted Trent. He is a filmmaker from Belleville. He's an independent filmmaker, and his specialty is creating independent films, which I'm telling you, folks, I've spent the last several months renting videos. I go down the list from the Academy Awards every year and rent the videos. And Hollywood's just gone in a different direction. And if you take the time to watch any of these independent films, they're wonderful. They're charming. They're warm. They're so easy to identify with as an average everyday person. Hollywood has just gotten away from really being able to connect, I think, with me. I think a lot of people feel that way. And it's really time to start giving these independent filmmakers a shot. And Wehrenberg Theaters here in the St. Louis area and surrounding areas has stepped up to do that. And we're here to talk with Ted Trent of Belleville, the movie, and one of his co-stars, Cooper Shaw. Tell us all about that endeavor. Thank you for being with us tonight, folks.
Well, thanks,
Lisa.
Mark,
thank you.
Well, so, I'll start. Cooper, you want me to go first?
Yeah, go please. Ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I made a movie called Hidden Hills in Los Angeles, and you're right. The spirit of doing anything as an independent was kind of it was horrific trying to get a community around a small business venture. And that's what movie making is. A lot of people just think of it as some kind of, you know, unattainable business venture, but I don't. So when I was doing that in Los Angeles, everybody just seemed disinterested. So I thought, well, what if I went back to my hometown of Belleville, Illinois? And I thought, I think everybody's going to think that's pretty cool to make a movie. And I know my town is trying to figure out how to create new business. You know, some of the shops have closed down, and I thought if I'm going to try to generate revenue or start a business, why not go back to the town that made me who I am and I'm so proud to be from. So that kind of, you know, that was the idea, and I know an actor-director out here named Dan Stedman, and I said, will you go back to my hometown and, like, study the culture and come up with a movie that would make my hometown proud? And that's what he did. He went back. He kind of was incognito, interviewed Cooper Shaw and lots of other actors, and we made a movie out on my family farm, which is in Freeburg, Illinois. But when I was talking to Dan, and I said, so Dan, after he spent a week in Belleville, I said, what did you discover? He said, Ted, the name of your movie in the movie is about this town called Belleville. There's so much deep culture here, rich culture, and the people are great, and a lot of great actors in the area. He goes, you know, these are actors that they could compete right here in Los Angeles. I said, well, then we got a movie, right? So he wrote the movie. And next thing you know, we had a five-week run at the Lincoln Theater in Belleville, Illinois. And the total gross profit of the film was $24,000. Now, I had never done this before, so I didn't know if that was a good number or a bad number. But I started throwing that number around here in Los Angeles, and everybody was like, independent films don't make $25,000 or $24,000 anywhere. You know, only a few do. So next thing I know, Weinberg Theaters starts talking to me about putting our movie in their theater chain. And they were explaining, you know, we're Megaplex, and normally we work with big films, but because we're a Midwestern theater chain that started here, we want to give you a shot. And I don't know if your listening audience understands this, but independent films don't get shots in Megaplexes, you know. So I was listening to the top of your show, and I was thinking how much people need to support Weinberg Theaters for giving somebody from the Midwest a shot to be in their theaters. You know,
are they doing any promo for you, Ted?
It's amazing.
Are you guys doing this on your own?
Well, it started off, they gave us two screens at the Ronnie's Theaters in St. Louis, and we sold 80% of the tickets. And they were difficult times. They were like Sunday night at 7 and Sunday at 2 and Monday at 7. And we weren't supposed to get good numbers, but we did. And then they gave us five, they decided to give us five theaters. Now, what's interesting is they're giving us what's called a full run, meaning it's just like any other Universal, Sony. I mean, it starts on Friday at noon, and it goes all the way to Thursday, the last show. So it's not just like one showing. It's all week. So just like Spider-Man or any other movie,
we're
getting the same shot as anybody else. So first they gave us two screens. Then they gave us five theaters that they're going to do full runs in. So I told my writer-director that, and Dan said, I need to go back to Belleville to support the film. So he actually is living in Belleville right now. And when they found out that he did that, they upped the ante, and now they're giving us 13 theaters all the way up in Rochester, Minnesota, down to Springfield, Missouri.
Wow.
So this could open up. What they're doing is they're testing this. They're giving us a shot. Now, if the local community supports this film, they're going to start turning to other independent films in the area and giving them shots as well. But you got to do box office. So if we don't have people show up, it could be it. That could be it. This is their shot. You know, they're giving us a shot. But luckily, we're finding, you know, the support of the community is showing up.
And this is not your first rodeo, actually, Ted. You've made a couple of other small films before.
Well, I've made three films. This is the second of the three.
Okay.
We've already shot another movie in Belleville called Expect Delays, which is a Christmas movie. Now, if we do great numbers with Belleville, there's a shot that this movie will also get to be in Wehrenberg theaters. But we got to, you know, we got to keep proving ourselves. Plus, we're having auditions for another movie we talked to Wehrenberg about that we'll be filming next summer. And it's a sports-related feature film, but everybody has a chance to audition on a local basis. And the reason I'm doing that is because, like Cooper Shaw, who's on the phone, you know, I was living in the Midwest. I went to Carbondale 1 year, O'Fallon High School, Illinois State University, and everybody told me that if I wanted to be in the movie business, I had to move away from home. And the fact is that you don't have to do that anymore. You know, one thing that could, you know, turn around Ferguson and these small towns all across the Midwest is just imagine if they started to bring film. You know, Hollywood doesn't have to come to the Midwest. The Midwest can just decide, we're going to start making movies, just like what I'm doing.
Oh, well, okay, so I want to get a little background on you guys, a little bit of interest, you and Cooper. Are you both from the Belleville area, the Midwest? Cooper, I think you're from St. Louis, is that correct?
I am from the suburbs of St. Louis, born and raised.
So where'd you go to high school, Cooper?
the ever-important question. I went to Ladue High School, Ladue Horton Watkins.
Okay, there you go. No, I know everything I need to know about you.
Apparently.
So
where did you go to high school?
I graduated from Pattonville.
Awesome.
Yeah. So how did the two of you find each other?
Well, that's a good question. Ted, you want me to field this one?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So I got an email from my agent in St. Louis that there was this film crew coming in from Los Angeles and that they were looking for local talent, and if I was interested, I should get in touch with the director, Dan Stedman. So I immediately sent Dan an email with a link to my website and a link to my demo reel and my headshot and my resume and sort of lengthy cover letter introducing myself. And he emailed me back and almost immediately and it said, you know, he would review my information and that he would be in St. Louis doing auditions. And he would let me know when those were, and great. And then in the meantime, it's like feast or famine almost, because it had been a really slow period of time for me. So like moments after I got that email from Dan, I then got a text message from my agency in Chicago saying that I had a commercial audition in Chicago and could I get there for it, and I confirmed that, and then 2 minutes later Dan emails me again and says, hey, auditions are on the date and the time that I had just confirmed that I was going to Chicago.
Oh, great.
So, I was like, oh no. So I emailed him immediately. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. If there's any way that we can arrange to do an audition over Skype, or maybe I can send you a videotaped audition or anything, because I would love to be able to still be, you know, considered for the opportunity. And he emailed me back this really gracious email saying, yes, a Skype audition would be fine. Go knock them dead in Chicago and get in touch with me when you're back in town, which I did.
I love it because I didn't even know this story. Keep going.
So,
well, let me piggyback off of that from what Ted said.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, okay, St. Louis, not a huge market for that kind of thing. From from the actor's point of view, I mean, how hard is it to get work in this region? I know Chicago is probably a bigger market and there's probably more work there. I could see you traveling there more often, but in St. Louis, how much work is in St. Louis?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting question. Again, it's sort of like what I said, it's a little bit like feast or famine. There are busy times and then there are not so busy times. And it also depends a lot for me because I do theater as well. And the challenge that I've had theater-wise here is that I'm in the Stage Actors Union, which sort of limits the opportunities that I can take because as a union actor, you're not allowed to work non-union jobs.
Uh-huh.
And so moving back here from New York, which I needed to do simply because I needed to be closer to my family, just for myself, for my own sort of like heart and soul. I wanted to be closer to my friends and family and to move at a slightly slower pace, which St. Louis has definitely allowed me to do, and also it does pose certain challenges. So a lot of that, though, for me has been that since moving back here, more film opportunities have come along rather than theater opportunities, which has been really fascinating because I never considered myself to be a film actor. I always thought of myself as, like, a theater monster, you know? Like, I'm on the stage. I must be on the stage. But since moving back here because of the equity regulations, actors' equity regulations, more film opportunities have been presenting themselves, which has actually been absolutely delightful and a really great sort of, like, different problem to have to solve as an actor, like, you know, because each, as I say problem, I mean, like, each acting job sort of poses a different approach that you have to take to playing the role. So doing the film work has been a really interesting, different muscle to have to exercise as an actor. So.
Well, I think too, Cooper, the timing of it all has to do with, you know, one of the reasons I'm making movies back in the Midwest is because you don't need, you know, the equipment and the technology is such where you can pack an entire movie studio in a couple of boxes.
Right.
You know, the cameras we can shoot with and how we get things done now is so much more compact and available anywhere. You know, so
yeah.
I think timing-wise, you know, people are turning, you know, back to these places that movies might never be made because now they can. And that
right.
I think that's why these opportunities are starting to happen, not because there's anything wrong with any area in the world. It's just that you couldn't move an entire movie studio to Belleville or St. Louis, you know, but now you can.
Yeah.
So there's going to be more and more of these opportunities, I think, happening.
Well, let me ask you, Ted, I mean, going back to your roots, back to your beginnings, I mean, you said you studied at SIU and you kind of floated around in the Midwest a little bit with your education. How much motivation, how much cultivation is there for somebody who has the passion for film? How much can you find of that kind of support here in the Midwest if you want to study film and acting?
Well, I'll tell you the answer to the question may not be the answer you want to hear, Lisa, but it's like any business. If you want to be in a baker, what do? You know, if you want to start a gas station, you know, the point is if you want to be an actor in the movie business, you can make your own film. You know, do you have enough money to make the film? And if you don't have enough money to make the film, you got to figure out how to get the money. So it isn't a matter of whether or not the opportunities are there. It's whether or not an actor or a producer or a director has the ability to produce that project. And that's what you were talking about at the top of your show. It's not about what the government can do for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what a production company can do for you. It's what can you do for you. So
how does a small filmmaker like you get started? How did you find the money?
Well, I got involved in real estate. So I learned early on, I used to be a talent agent in Atlanta, Georgia, that the only people that make it in show business tend to be people who have lots of money. So you know, no matter how you look at it, I'd say 95% of people succeeding in show business at the higher levels where they're making lots of money are people that came from money. Daddy has it, somebody has it, right?
Right.
So I'm like, well, I don't have anybody like that. So I knew I had to get involved in a regular job. So I sell real estate in downtown Los Angeles where the average home price is about $600,000.
Wow.
And right, and I sell a lot of it. So, but I've been doing that for 14 years. So when the economy sank, I thought, okay, economy sinks, I run out of money because nobody's selling houses anymore. So
right.
I wanted to start a new business that would, you know, one of the things they say when the economy tanks, people go to movies. So because they can't afford to take trips to London anymore or cruises. So they go for cheap entertainment. So what I'm trying to do as a business professional is be responsible with my career where I have, you know, real estate investments, and I do sell real estate, so I'm having income come in that way, and I'm building. So I don't really expect too much return on my real estate endeavors for a couple of more years. So I'm trying to build an inventory of product that I then go out and sell. Now, some of it, like Belleville, I have another movie that's making no money, not yet anyway. Now, Belleville's the first movie I've made that has a chance of actually making money.
Mm-hmm.
But we're a long way away from that point at this point. But
which is why it's so critical. We need to support this Werenberg Theater initiative, that those folks are giving you the opportunity to put your stuff out there in front of the public.
Yeah, it really is. Even people in Hollywood don't understand that this is happening. Like how it could happen, and the fact is, it's a very unique happening. You know, there aren't movie chains like Werenberg all over the country. I mean, they're a very unique business model. So the fact that they're doing this is they're giving a Midwestern kid like me, along with all the people I brought into the fold, like Cooper, a chance to make it in the movie business. And it is a business. So if people don't show up, the business dies.
Okay, let's give folks an idea of what they're going to experience on September 5th, the premiere of the movie. What are they going to see? What is Belleville the movie? Tell us about it.
I'll let you explain it, Cooper, but I do want to say Cooper Shaw, like a complete unexpected for all of us, is one of the things as the owner of the film, I submitted it to various competitions. And one of the competitions I submitted it to, like when people get an Academy Award or an Emmy, it's because that production company or that individual performance was submitted either by the actor themselves or the filmmaker. So I submitted Belleville to the American Movie Awards, and Cooper Shaw was selected as Best Supporting Actress in 2014 for her role as Arlene in Belleville. So Belleville won, Cooper won, an American Movie Award for her performance in this film. So point being is we're getting national recognition for a performance from someone who's from St. Louis. So that's what they can expect, a good performance. Cooper, you tell them about the movie.
Yes.
I'm all flustered and speechless every time.
You'll be able to use that the rest of your life. That's amazing.
If there was a camera on me right now, I probably turned about 10 shades of red. I'm like, oh, stop.
I'm sure you guys worked really hard on this. I'm sure you deserve the accolades, and you should probably get used to it.
Well, sir, it's really very sweet of you. Yeah, it was shocking. Actually, when Ted, I'm going to tell the story of when you first told me about the award. Can I tell that story?
Yeah.
Because I think it's hilarious. So I was sitting at in my living room doing laundry. Like, I had the washing machine was running, and I get this message on Facebook from Ted saying, call me. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll call him in a few minutes. Because I was like, you know, it's
I'm like, no, call me now.
I know. And so he sent me like three more messages back to back saying, call me now. And then another one that said, I know you're seeing these messages. Call me right now. You won something and I can't tell you what until you call me.
Oh my God.
And so finally I called him and he's like, oh, so that gets you to respond to me.
Right.
So then he told me that I won this thing and I think I screamed like,
you
whole
freaked
new
out for
decibels
about 2 days.
Of sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'll tell you a little bit about the movie. I'm a huge fan of the movie Starman and Forrest Gump. So just funny fact, Forrest Gump is coming back into theaters. I don't know if you know this, Cooper, the same week Belle Belle's going to be in theaters.
Oh, my gosh.
I did not know.
I know. Nightmare. Don't go see it. No, anyway, I didn't say that.
You
go
can watch that one on Netflix. Go to the theater and watch
right,
it.
Exactly. But so the movie, it's the behind the scenes is I wanted to make a movie that honored my father, who is a farmer. And he and I have always had kind of an odd relationship. I see him about once a year, and we talk about 20 minutes. And it's, hey, how you doing? Fine. How you doing? Fine. All right, well, see you next Christmas. And that's just kind of how it is. And I didn't want that to be my legacy with my dad. And he always told me he wanted to be in a movie. So I wanted to film a movie for him and with him. And he gets to appear in this movie as my dad in just a couple of scenes. So he's really happy. But the point of the movie is, in the movie, there's an out-of-this-world character that I play. His name is Neela, which is the word alien spelled backwards. And I am on Earth for a reason that I won't share. But I meet this farmer named Willie, who's played by Tim O'Leary. And we become friends throughout this film. Cooper is the antagonist. She's the meanie.
True.
Right? And
yeah.
The movie is about me realizing why I'm on the planet. The farmer is realizing that the loss of his wife in the film, his wife dies, and he just can't get over it. So the film is also about overcoming depression and how the community can be there for you at really hard times, times that you don't think you can get through. And what I'm so proud about this film right now being in theaters is when we're looking at Ferguson and we're looking at how do you deal with issues that are bigger than us, you know, they're global. And we look at a small town and we judge, did they do it right, did they do it wrong? Belleville is a movie that I think really nails it. You know, here's a guy dealing with depression, and the community shows up, and they let him know how much they care about him and how much they want him to move on, and not to forget his wife, but that, you know, that he can lean on them in his depression. And even with the recent death of Robin Williams, somebody who we don't know what was, you know, what his private pains were, it might have been a different ending had the community really known how to reach out to him. And I think that's what's so timely about this film hitting theaters, and I'm so proud of it coming out of the Midwest, because that's when you live in LA, that's what you're so proud of, is being from a place where community is so important. And issues, like you said at the top of your show, when you said you were embarrassed about what's going on, you know, a lot of people wouldn't be embarrassed, Lisa. They would just ignore it. And the fact that you care about your community is what distinguishes us being from the Midwest. We really care about our neighbors.
Yeah,
and
we
identify with who they are and the struggles that they're in. A lot of communities don't even care about their neighbor and don't even want to be bothered with their struggle. And that's what this movie is about. It's about the fact that we should care, and we need to care.
Well, it sounds like a fabulous, fabulous film. And it's, like I said earlier on, you know, I think Hollywood has become so far removed from the human connection that all of us over here in flyover country and all of, you know, all of us regular folks living everyday lives need to identify with. This sounds just like the right thing to connect with, right past the holiday weekend folks, take your families. What, is there a rating on this movie?
It's not rated, and I'll tell you why. It cost me $5,000 to get a rating. But there's no harsh language. There's a little fight scene, and that's about it. But it's non-rated. We've
so
already, you know, it's already aired.
Family friendly?
I would consider it family friendly.
Okay.
Yeah. Would you, Cooper? Cooper?
Cooper, are you, I think we lost Cooper. She dropped back on, but I do see her on the board. Cooper, are you there?
One more thing, Lisa, I wanted to say is
sure.
that I made this movie. I made this movie for the Midwest. So I don't know if your audiences have ever had a movie made for them.
I don't think so.
Yeah, but it would be a shame if they didn't go out and see the movie in the movie theaters, because that's, you know, when I made this movie, it was for them, not for people in L.A., because I don't think people in L.A. are necessarily going to get the uniqueness of it. Just like sometimes
yeah.
people in the Midwest may not get, you know, a movie that's all shot in New York. They may not relate to the pacing or the lifestyle choices and things like that happening in big cities like that. But this is
sure.
this is right here from the heartland, and it's for the heartland. So I hope they
okay.
go.
All right. It sounds like a fabulous movie. If you want to see the trailers for these movies, folks, you can go to BelleVilleTheMovie.com. You can also go to see some of the other works of Ted Trent and company, Ted Trent Studios, ExpectDelaysMovie.com, RedLodgeMovie.com, and HiddenHillsMovie.com. Thank you, Ted. I really appreciate you coming on the show and letting us know about this latest project that you've got going, and we look forward to September 5th is the release date in Werenberg Theaters around the region in the Midwest.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you. Folks, we're going to come right back. We're going to talk to Joe Richardson on a little bit more serious subject, the drug situation, the drug culture in America. Thanks for being with us. This is Lisa Payne Nager, Missouri Grassroots Radio. We'll be right back.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thank you to Ted, Trent, and Cooper Shaw for joining us. I hope y'all take a few minutes or take some time out next week and go to the movie theater, Werenberg Theaters. It is kind of a big coup for the Midwest to be supporting these independent films. And if you want to be involved in affecting your culture, folks, and affecting the kinds of things that you see in the media, then you have to support them. So go out, vote with your dollars, go to the Werenberg Theaters next week. Okay, we're going to switch tracks a little bit, folks. Not necessarily a political subject, but something that does affect the culture very seriously. I think it's been going on for so long, most of us are kind of jaded to it, and our lives are so busy, we don't pay attention to what's really going on right underneath our own noses. But it's drugs. Drugs, especially in Missouri. I mean, I know that there's a huge, huge heroin problem. My kids are older and not into that high school atmosphere, but I don't think people really understand what's going on in the whole high school arena anymore. You know, we're kind of disconnected. You know, we lead very busy lives, and you have no idea what's going on. And I had no idea how heroin was such a big problem in the country and in my area specifically in the Missouri area. Until I ran into an old friend not too long ago, someone I went to high school with who had suffered a loss because of the drug culture specifically hitting his family. With me tonight is Joe Richardson, and he started a project along with Jeff Mozingo, an area businessman here. Most of the folks in St. Louis would recognize that name, awakenproject.com. And he's here tonight to tell his story about why he is why and how he's fighting back against the drug culture, and why this is so important for you folks to get involved in and engaged. Joe, thanks for being with me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me. It's good to be on your show.
I want to play a clip. You guys have a fabulous website, and if I can find it, I think I lost it here. But you guys have an incredible website. It's awakenproject.com, and you can all go to the this website and see how Joe and Jeff Mazingo are putting together a program to reach kids and to reach the public in general, to inform and engage them about the drug culture here in this area. If I can get it to play.
Well, the Awaken Project is something that adults as well as students need to see.
It was cool, right when we walked in to see the big drum set. We knew we were going to have a good time.
The drums were really cool. I was not expecting that because usually school stuff is just like talking at you like the whole time, but then it had like a fun like aspect to the assembly.
The entertainment aspect of it allows us to bring kids in and get their attention and be entertaining. And then I can start talking about the positive effects of music as opposed to the negative effects of drugs. The thing that we morph into with this Awaken Project is drugs. We have a fantastic person in Joel Richardson that unfortunately lost his son to heroin.
That was Jeff Mazingo in that clip, and we do have Joe Richardson on the line with us. Joe, you know, you and I hadn't seen each other for quite some time. We grew up in the same neighborhood, came from the same background, and when we ran into each other, you told me a story about something that had happened to you not too long ago, and I want you to tell your story, if that's okay with you, and tell us what about that story motivated you guys to come together with this Awaken Project.
Well, Lisa, back in 2012 of August, I lost my son to a heroin overdose. And before that time that he passed, it was about a 10-month struggle. And I had no idea what was going on. My wife didn't have any idea. And we were on vacation. We happened to get a call from our son, and he just basically told me that he was stopped by a police officer, and he had drugs on him, and he was addicted to heroin. And at that point, I just told him, you know, when we get home, we'll get you help. We love you, and we're going to try to do whatever we can. So my wife and I went back to our hotel room, and she started researching heroin side effects and things that are involved with recovery, and we were very taken back and brought to tears because, as you know now, that anyone that does heroin and they get hooked on heroin, they have a long road ahead of them. And most heroin addicts don't make it these days. And so when I found out and I got the call that my son passed, I just vowed that I did not want to be one of these silent people that says, hey, I'm not going to say anything about it. I don't want people to know. Because my son was a good person. He was a good person. He was a loving person. He was a caring person. He made a bad choice. And the dope does not define who my son was. But heroin changes you. It takes your mind, twists it, makes you somebody you're not. I didn't even know my son anymore. Some of the things he told me that he would do to get money to get heroin would drop you to your knees. And what these kids don't understand today is that the heroin in today's world, is the purity of the heroin is 90%. Back in the 60s and the 70s, the purity of the heroin was 10 to 12%. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing in these kids today is that they don't understand what they're getting into. So when they do try this, and sometimes they're being lied to by dealers or tell them it's just a little happy pill, but it's more than that, you know. Heroin used to be shot up through your arm and a needle. But now they make it in a pill form where you can ingest it or you can snort it. So what we have to try to do, and what we wanted to try to do is I vowed when my son passed that I was not going to be silent. I wanted to be heard. I want people to understand. I want to go out and educate and talk to people and kids and parents, because I don't want any parent to ever have to go through this. We're not supposed to bury our children.
No.
That's just the way it is in life, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. So I had partnered up a few times with the NCADA, which is the National Council for Alcohol and Drug Abuse. And they asked me if I wanted to come speak because they knew I wanted to be outward about it. I didn't want to keep it in. And, you know, it's something that people need to realize. We need to talk about this. They need to know about it. You need to educate yourself about it. And you need to talk to your kids about it. But I wanted to help any way I could, so I did some speaking for them at some of their hometown or town hall meetings. And what I found out was it was a nice experience, but, you know, I got about 15 minutes of time. And that's not near enough time to tell my story and what we had been through and what we did and to understand red flags and signs that your child may be going through. So we decided to do something. And when my son met Jeff, about 2 months before my son passed, he met Jeff. And my son also is a musician, and he could play 7 instruments. So I introduced him to Jeff Mozingo, and they got to meet and talk. And then two months later, my son was gone. So Jeff approached me and said, I heard you're speaking for an organization, and I thought maybe you and I could partner up and put something together to where we could go help kids in high school and middle school. So I told him I was willing to listen, and let's see what we could do. So he went to the schools and told them that he would like to come in and do a music advocacy and drug awareness and education program, and they were all on board. They want to know, when can you be here? So that's how the Awaken Project got started.
Okay. This is not just some – I mean, this is an amazing program you guys have put together. I went to your website, and you've got some video footage of some of the programs that you've given at some of the area schools. You guys have put together a spectacular production. It's a production. It's amazing.
Yes, it is very much a production. This just isn't because I get a kick out of thinking back about one school. And when we got to the school, they basically had a table and 2 chairs set up for us to sit at. They had no idea. And what we do is we go in and the premise of our whole – the whole Awaken Project, and what it really boils down to is that kids are faced with choices every day. We as adults are faced with choices every day, and your consequences of your choices that you make are good or bad because your choices are good or bad. But we go into schools, and we set up a stage, a very, very nice drum set, and Jeff is a fantastic drummer.
He's an amazing drummer.
He's played with people like the Fifth Dimension and Sammy Davis Jr. So
wow.
He is very well schooled in the drums. And what Jeff does is we go in and set up, and we have the lights, we have our backdrop, and we basically just put on a little bit of a rock concert for the kids to start out. And then Jeff talks about his life and where he's been taken on the road with music and the positive outcome of what he has, and Jeff owns 2 music stores in the area. And then when Jeff's done talking about that, he'll give statistics on what music does for you as a student or a child, and we're finding out and seeing, and there's statistics to prove this, that more kids that are involved in music are less apt to be drug addicts, alcoholics. They score higher on math tests, and
right.
It just seems to be a great fit to morph toward music. Well, a lot of the schools are trying to get rid of music because of the budget. And we really need music in our schools because it gives kids an outlet. And the kids that don't play sports, that aren't in acting, they've got something they can turn to if they need to. And then when Jeff is done with his, I get up and I start talking about my life and what I've been through and done and the choices I made. You know, I played professional baseball for the Red Sox. I went to college on a scholarship, and I am from the area here. And then I talk about where I went with my career and why and how I got as far as I did. And then I start talking about the heroin problem in the area. and we do have a serious heroin problem in our area. We have an epidemic. And I found out that it's not just here. It's all over the United States. Because when I talk to old teammates or old college mates, they're talking to me about the same thing we're seeing here. And I've been asked many a time to go and speak at other schools out of state. But I try to talk about statistics and give these kids what they need to know and what they need to hear to educate themselves about what heroin can do to you. And I can tell you firsthand that it will take you, it will change you and turn you into somebody your parents don't even know. And then we mix this in with musicians that have made bad choices, because Jeff and my son both are in the music world. And we kind of take these kids on a roller coaster ride of emotions. And at the very end, I talk about my son and what all my son could do, how he was, and, you know, he was just a wonderful person. And then I make sure these kids understand that this could happen to anybody. If you make a wrong choice to try heroin, heroin will take you, and it will take your life over and make you somebody you're not. So we kind of end the show with questions and answers, and a lot of the kids have a lot of good questions. And we try to make sure that they understand at the end of the day that the choice you make to go to try heroin, or if you don't try heroin, that choice you make is going to affect the rest of the choices you make the rest of your life.
So, Joe, talk a little bit. Give me some of the statistics. And I kind of want to talk. I know that you guys, you not only do you speak to kids in schools, but you go to churches and you speak to, you know, you kind of hit it from both ends. You know, you hit the parents,
yes,
and the kids.
We do that. We really want to go wherever we need to be to help kids. You know, we're losing 5 to 6 kids a week in our metropolitan area to heroin alone.
Oh my gosh.
This is surpassing drinking and driving deaths. And the top 3 leading causes of teen death in America is homicide, suicide, and accident. And it's all based from drug and alcohol abuse. But the heroin has skyrocketed in our area in the last 10 years because of the purity of the heroin. These kids have no idea what they're getting. And they're getting these huge amounts of heroin in their system, and it's tearing up their system. It attacks the respiratory system. And what they don't realize is that this is not something that you do and you can just walk away from. The heroin addicts today, they're 23% that try heroin get hooked. They become addicts. 67% of those pass away. There are no more old heroin addicts in our world today because of the purity of the heroin that comes in.
Oh my gosh.
And there's a lot to be said for prescription drug abuse, because this is where it's kind of started, with overriding scripts and people doctor shopping. And, you know, prescription painkillers, when taken in large amounts, is nothing but synthetic heroin. And we've had some professional athletes that get hooked on it and have to go to rehab. We've had musicians and things of that sort. But people need to realize, and they need to understand, that there is a problem in our area, and that kids are kids, and they're going to be curious, but they do need to understand that heroin is nothing to mess with. And I'm living proof, and I've lived it, and it only took 10 months to take my son.
Okay, let's talk about it from a parent's point of view. So, you know, I don't know if I would know a heroin addict if one came up and hit me in the face. You know, it's obviously so prevalent out there, and it's like you just said, it's taking so many kids in our own area. What can parents look for? What can they, you know, how can they become engaged and to kind of see the signs?
First of all, as a parent, you have a right to know what your kids are doing. You have a right to check up on your child, and if you have to check up on your child, there's a reason. And if you're checking up on your child and the kid's not doing anything wrong, then he shouldn't be getting mad, or her. Because as a parent, I'll say it again, you have the right to check up on your child, because mm-hmm. it's your job and your responsibility to guide him and lead him in this world. But I noticed some things in my son, and I've talked to other parents, that, you know, being tired all the time, sleeping more than usual, money missing. Hey, Dad, I'm going to go up to see Timmy. We're going to the Taco Bell, and they're gone for 3 hours. I know for sure one night my son gave me that line, and he was in the city buying dope. You know, money missing, their hygiene, their ambition. There's no more ambition. Their drive to succeed is goes down, missing work, don't want to go to school, don't want to apply themselves. Those are all red flags and signs if your son or daughter changes friends often. I saw a revolving door of friends, and my son would always say, well, Dad, you remember Jim? I said, I've never met Jim. Yeah, oh, yeah, Dad, you remember? I said, no, I've never met this kid. And I mean, it got to be very common because the changing of the friends, because when most of these kids, I'm finding out, and my son told me, you know, Dad, you can only take advantage of people so long before you have to find another avenue to get what you need. And that's so sad that you have to exhaust people in your life to get to another place, which is not good.
Right. That's tragic. So what's the, other than just the physical chemical allure, what are you finding when you're talking to kids? What's their attitude about, you know, why are so many kids, I mean, kids are so much more sophisticated than you and I were when we were growing up. You know, you would think that they would know better. They're kids still, but what is it about this that's so appealing?
I think they just think they're bulletproof nowadays with all that they've been given and not earned. And the kids of today's world, they have a sense of entitlement. And I'm here to tell you, you're not entitled to anything. You need to earn it. You need to go out and earn it for yourself, not be given everything. And they just don't understand that, oh, this won't happen to me. Or once won't even matter. Well, I'm telling you right now, heroin, trying heroin once will matter in your life. And kids today, just I think they just think they're bulletproof and this won't happen to me.
How was your message received to these kids? I mean, you had some great clips on your website, but generally, how are these kids taking this in?
We've had tremendous outcry of these kids, and I always, at the end of our assembly, I tell the kids that we're here for you today. If you're struggling, you know someone's struggling, or you have someone in your family, or you've been affected by this, I'm here to help you today. And don't be ashamed. You need to talk about it. You need to get it out. You need to get help. We're here for you. And it's been very, very well received. The kids come up. It's very nice to see and hear when a kid comes up and says, this is the best assembly we've ever had in our school, and thank you. You know, you may have saved my life. And thank you. Now I know how to deal with a brother or a mother or an aunt. I've had those conversations with kids. It's very, very heartwarming, and it makes me feel good that, you know what, I am making a difference, and Jeff and I are making a difference. And that's what matters, and that's what our goal is to save kids and to keep kids from going down this destructive path by trying heroin.
I know that both you and Jeff, I mean, you guys have started this on your own. You're kind of, all of this is, you're doing this on your own. Are you receiving any community support through donations or anything to do this traveling and to promote this activity?
We have seen some, but we need a whole lot more because our goal is to be in a school every day and 2 days a week, two times a day, 5 days a week, if we can. We have a schedule coming up, Lisa. September 26th, we're going to be at the YMCA on Highway K in O'Fallon. September 30th, we're going to be in Chester, Illinois at the high school. August 1st, we're at Fort Zumwalt South High School. October 2nd, we're going to be at Ladue High School for two shows. October 21st, we're at DeSoto High School for the middle school and the high school. October 28th, we're going to be at Rockwood Valley Middle School. And October 30th, we're going to be at St. Genevieve High School and Middle School. And what these schools are doing is we get to set up at the high school, and they will bust the middle school kids in. And we just had a two assemblies at Farmington High School last Friday that was very, very well received. We're getting more bookings all the time, but we do need help. And for us to get this message out there and to keep going, we do need help. We do need donations, and we have had some people come forward and give us donations. We have also applied for our 501(c), and we're waiting to hear back from the government on that.
It may take a while. They don't get back to us very quickly.
We're crossing our fingers. We should be hearing something soon, I hope.
Good, good. Well, Joe, if folks want to get involved with you, or if they want to contact you for a booking, because obviously this is something that needs to take place across the area. You guys have done a great job of canvassing the general area here and in Illinois. How can folks find you?
They can call me on my cell phone, and my number is 636-284-1777, and that's Joe Richardson. And then you could call Jeff Mozingo at 314-406-2843. Or you can go to the website, and it would be jeff@awakenproject.org or joe@awakenproject.org. And then you can go to the Awaken website, which is awakenproject.org.
And I do recommend that you go to the website, folks. You can get just a taste of what it is, the program that they offer there. It is an amazing. It's a rock concert. They've got staging, they got lighting, they got drums, they got amplifiers, they've got the whole thing. And it's mesmerizing to see this. And there's no better way that I could think of to get these kids' attention when you need to talk to them about a subject as serious as this. And hopefully it'll awaken some parents, too, because I'm sure there's a lot of parents out there wandering around totally clueless what's going on.
Yes, Lisa, we encourage and we tell the schools that please tell the parents that they are invited. And I can tell you that they do not have a problem with that. They want more parents to come because I think the parents need to know and need to see this just as much as the kids. And I just can't stress enough, because I was one of those parents that my kid would never do that. You know, there's not a problem in our area here. I wish I would have had something that I could have went to give me some signs before I had got involved with this in the wrong way.
Right, absolutely. There's absolutely. I don't think you can be too aware. There's just not enough information out there about this. No, there's not.
Because when we're talking about losing our youth is what we have to survive in America on down the road. And we're losing way too many of our kids, and it's frightening that the number of kids we're losing in our area and nationwide also.
Absolutely. Well, Joe, I hope you'll come back and give us an update. We would love to have you and Jeff back on to tell us how your project is going across the country or across the region, and everybody needs to go to awakenproject.org. Support this initiative, folks. This is something, you know, this is how you can get involved and engaged in changing your immediate culture here in the region, help your youth. It's about your future. It's about your kids' future. It's awakenproject.org. Thank you, Joe, so much for being with me tonight.
Thank you, Lisa, and we will give you an update later if you'd like us to come back on. And I also
would like to
say that you really do need to come see this in person, because what you see will amaze you, and it'll really hit home with you on what you need to do as far as watching over your kids a little bit better and being involved and knowing what's going on.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Awakenproject.org. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Okay. Folks, we will be right back. We have got Tom Martz of Locke & Smith with us tonight. We're going to talk tonight, at the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about politics. We got a veto session coming up here in Missouri. You know, we've seen a lot of crazy politicking going on with all this Ferguson deal. Let's find out what they're going to do in the veto session. It's a little scary. We'll be right back.
It really is time for the people of America to take up Pitchfork.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grass Fire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony, put a feather in his hand and called it macaroni.
You know what that means when you hear that sound. We've got Tom Martz from the Locke and Smith Foundation on. We're going to come back to the session in Jefferson City in September and deal with the veto session. It never makes me comfortable when we have politicians in the state capitol. It's nothing good ever comes of it. We're going to find out. Tom, thanks for coming on tonight and filling us in on what we might expect in the upcoming veto session in September.
Good evening, Lisa. I just left a meeting with the committee. We're in the process of scoring the last of the Senate bills, so we will know who the five finalists are for the Granite Plaque Award.
Oh, are you going to give us any secret hints, any updates?
Well, I think what you'll find is that some of the finalists from last year are going to be finalists again, and on both sides of the chamber, both the Senate and the House. I think we're going to have some new people in there. I do believe for positive fact that Nick Marshall is a finalist. Will Krause is a finalist. Will is a two-time winner, and Nick is a three-time winner of the Granite Plaque. So we may find a four-timer and a three-timer.
Wow, that would be exciting. And are you guys going to award the plaque at the Capitol again on Consent of the Governed Day?
We would like to, yeah. I mean, that works out best for everybody involved. And we used to have the banquet down here in Springfield on the Saturday before, the Saturday after Constitution Day. But this year, what we're doing is that we're going to announce our finalists probably the Saturday after Constitution Day, which is September the 17th, I believe.
Okay, very good. Well, let us know. We'll be happy to put that on the air for you.
Sure.
Okay, so we have a number of bills. We're going to talk about House bills tonight and do Senate bills next week. Is there anything floating around out there in the atmosphere that's particularly egregious, something we should stay away from? What do you have any expectations? I never like it when the legislators go back to Jefferson City. I don't ever think it's a good idea. Maybe, I don't know. I was not thrilled with the constitutional amendment for the right to farm bill going on. Is there any way we can stop that in the veto session? I guess not. I know they're doing a recount.
Well, I think the A1 opponents are going to be fighting against the override of 1326, because that's an ag bill.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the bill that had the Missouri Revitalization Dairy Farmer Fund set up to basically to appropriate monies to dairy farmers in certain instances when the price of milk does this, that, or the other. But there was also a lot more things in that bill. It was the aspect that they were raising the amount of ag land that could be owned in the state of Missouri up to 10%, which, you know, being a staunch private property rights organization, I absolutely am astounded that a rancher or a farmer that owns ag land has to get permission to sell their property from the Department of Agriculture.
And that's what this bill outlines, that they have to get permission.
No, that's already in law.
It's already.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to overturn that. It's a sovereignty issue.
Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to increase the amount of ag property that is allowed to be owned by a foreign individual or a foreign corporation from 1% up to 10%, I believe.
Okay. There's a lot of ways that we can go down this road because everybody's afraid that China's going to come in and buy up Missouri. I understand that. But you're right. The reality is people should be able to sell their property if they want to sell their property. Yes?
Yeah. Now, what I find interesting is the governor actually vetoed 24 House bills total, of which it appears 14 of these are appropriations bills, or 13 of these are appropriations bills, which means they were line itemed vetoed. So I would imagine the legislature is probably going to go after some of those line item vetoes.
Okay.
Not to override them. Now, he also vetoed four bills that are directly tied to or related to tax credits and sales taxes, of which I think the only one that I'd like to see overridden, and I know they're not going to do it, is 1455. And 1455 had a portion of the bill that would require government to prove that an individual or a business that took a tax exemption was not allowed to take that tax exemption, instead of having the business prove to government that they could take that exemption. So it's putting notice to government. But there's so much convoluted in that bill that the only aspect of that bill that was halfway decent was I consider what is considered the burden of proof. But I know the legislature is not going to override that. Now the one that really absolutely gets me is 1707. This, are you sitting down?
Yes.
This bill, as it is written, would actually allow college police officers, and I am quoting the bill here, to establish and enforce regulations on college campuses.
Say that again. What?
House Bill 1707. There's a section in that bill that actually allows college police officers to establish and enforce regulations on college properties as pertain to vehicle citations and things of that nature, like
speeding.
And they
weren't doing that before?
No. Here. Well, actually, no, they're not. But this actually gives the college police officers the availability to establish and enforce. Establish means that they could basically write something off the top of their head, should they feel like it, and enforce it.
Well, I mean, aside from the state-run universities, it's a security issue. Why is the legislature, colleges and universities, private as well, I'm assuming, why are they sticking their nose in how these people manage their properties?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, there is a, and I don't know what section it is, but I know I have read it on multiple occasions, there is a section in the Missouri Constitution which establishes the College Board of, the College Board of something, where they act as the government of the college-university system within the state of Missouri. And based on the way it's worded and based on the way you read it, it's almost as if this board of curators, I believe is what it's called, is the governmental branch of all the universities and the colleges systems within the state of Missouri. it's almost like they don't even need the state legislature to give them the authority to do anything, because the Constitution states that they are the governmental body, they are the governmental entity that operates the colleges and universities and things of that nature. All the legislature would be required to do at that point is to appropriate the monies that are supposed to go to the colleges and universities.
Well, isn't that the way? I'm just kind of, I'm confused. It's just so much bureaucracy, I can't digest it.
Well,
I don't
currently, know. What they're trying to do is they're trying to give, like, Drury down here in Springfield and Evangel and MSU, they're basically giving them their own police force to enforce traffic laws and citations and things of that nature on college campus instead of having, like, the city of Springfield do it.
Okay. So they didn't have their own I mean, most of the colleges, even the small colleges, have their own college campus police.
I would have thought so, too. To my knowledge, no. Neither does Evangel. To my knowledge, neither does MSU. But there must be other colleges in the state of Missouri that don't either, because the legislature either last year or the year before, I want to say it was last year, gave them the authority to create a police force within the confines of the college grounds to enforce vehicle safety violations, codes, and things of that nature on college campuses.
Well, I thought they would already have that because everybody else already has that.
I don't know if everyone else has it or not. It may have only been Missouri.
Well, when I went to college, there were college police. You know, up here in the St. Louis area, all the colleges and universities up here have college campus police officers. You know?
Well, maybe they were doing it without the legislature's permission, so they decided, well, you can't do that without our permission, so they gave it to them.
And then if the college is so small that it can't afford campus police, I would think that it would fall under the jurisdiction of the sheriff or the local police force.
Yeah,
it seems
I
like
think
we're creating extra stuff here. Are they going to veto this?
Well, the governor's already vetoed it.
Oh, okay. And they're going to override it?
I hope not, because this is that actually gives the college police officers the availability to enforce and to establish codes and violations.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Who wrote this?
And that's the way it's worded in the the legislation, is that it allows college police officers to establish and to enforce regulations. To me, establish means that you get to make it up.
Okay, this is why you do not need to legalize marijuana, because somebody was smoking something when this was written. I do not understand.
Well, you know, the History Channel says the reason we got the Constitution is because the Founding Fathers were smoking weed and drinking whiskey. So I am of the essence, the problem we have in government now is that there's no weed being smoked and there's no whiskey being partaken of during the legislative session.
Well, you're right. Maybe it would be better.
I'm honestly of the belief that it might be.
Oh, my God. Who is writing this stuff? Oh, okay. What else you got?
Oh. 1307, I believe that is one that they will try to override, and that was the one, it's the abortion waiting period bill.
And the governor vetoed it, because we do have a Republican legislature. Because Republicans come out of the woodwork on abortion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really... I heard Tim Jones being interviewed the other day, and it appears, according to him, he doesn't have the votes to override 1326, which is the ag bill. I'm assuming that they'll probably override some of these tax credit bills. I mean, some of them I don't even understand why they were vetoed, except for Jay Nixon basically vetoed anything that looked like a tax credit. Under the auspices that the legislature didn't take into account the reduced revenues that would be coming into the state of Missouri Ergo, they created a scenario or a situation which the state of Missouri could not fully fund its obligations. So all these tax credits bills were vetoed because the reduced amount of revenue into the state was not taken into account when they done the appropriations bills.
So, but that's good. I mean, he, with all of the criticisms that we've had of Jay over the last few weeks, this is a good thing he's done. We don't
tax
credits.
Well, some of these aren't actually. I mean, I hate to say they're design tax credits, but it's the way the bill is titled. Some of them are actually just allowing the businesses not to file taxes on sales of product. It's basically like the you as the consumer are getting
mm-hmm.
to be able to keep more of your own money.
Uh-huh.
Instead of it being money that's being appropriated out of the state treasury and given to certain businesses, which most tax credits are that. But some of these, a couple of these are just basically it wasn't money coming out of the general revenue fund being given to a business. It was a business being basically exempting it from payment.
Uh-huh.
So it was reducing the tax burden, not only on the purchasing end, but also on the business end. And Jay Nixon says, well, then that's costing the state revenue. You can't do that.
Oh, I see.
You know, the state of Missouri must get every single penny that they can possibly
squeeze out. They possibly can. Yeah, right. So that's a sticky wicket, the tax credit. It's kind of a back and forth, up and down kind of thing. Sounds like the bills are rather contorted.
Yeah, and the another one he vetoed was the Missouri State Capital Commission. This is the one that would have allowed alcohol to be sold at, like, the, I can't think of what it is. Is there some sort of a museum prison up in Jefferson City that's coming up on a birthday pretty soon? Maybe it's 100th year anniversary or it's 150th year anniversary, and the legislature was trying to make it so that during this celebration gala, that alcohol could be sold and consumed on the premises. Well, Nixon vetoed that under the auspices that he doesn't want the people of the state of Missouri to be known as a bunch of drunks. That's me paraphrasing his veto letter.
Seriously? This is in a museum? And this
huh?
is all over a part? This is in a museum?
Yeah, it's the Jefferson City prison or something up there. It's a jail. It was a prison. It's something up in Jefferson City that's going to be, it's celebrating its either 100th year or its 150th year. It's now been turned into a museum, or it's been turned into a tourist attraction. And they were trying to make it so that alcohol could be served at this venue, and Nixon vetoed it.
Okay, so many things running through my head on this one that I could just throw jabs at. Okay, so first of all, who's paying for the gala? Do we know? Is that a state-funded gala?
It will probably be the state, yes.
Oh, fine. So to pay for the gala, we could offset the cost of the gala with alcohol sales, probably, and probably do well with that.
Yeah, it's always beneficial to offset the cost of something like that with the drunks.
Or you could just tax it to death. Okay, so why they've shut down a prison in Jefferson City when there are so many crooks running around the state capitol, I'll never know. That's another one.
No, this is an old.
Yeah, I know.
Jail,
I know.
Prison. Whatever it is up there.
Oh. And why is Jay Nixon sticking his nose in it in the first place? Doesn't he have enough to do with running to Ferguson as it is?
Well, it was a piece of legislation that made its way across his desk, and he basically said, no, we don't need a bunch of drunks running around Jefferson City any more than what they already are. So he vetoed this. Now, whether or not it comes up on the veto docket, I seriously doubt it. It's not one of those bills that somebody can say, hey, this is what I did for you.
Just extraneous hyperbole stuff. There's probably not enough to make. Yeah.
But yeah, I think 1307, the abortion waiting period one in the House, is probably about the only one that they will definitely go to the mat for.
And what did that do? That extended it from 24 to 72-hour waiting period?
Yes, I believe so. I'm not looking at any of these bills right now. I'm just looking at some notes that I put down on a piece of paper.
There's a Yankee Doodle bill. Someday we will discuss on Culture Vigilante my view on the whole abortion issue. I'm not a pro-abortion person, but I totally think that we are approaching this situation from way the wrong direction. If you want to end abortion, it's not this way. Let's just put it that way.
Well, there is actually confined in state statute already, and I want to say it's in 1.125 of the revised statutes of Missouri, something like that, that if Roe v. Wade ever gets overturned, then this law automatically kicks in, which prohibits the act of abortion here in the state of Missouri. And it's already on the books.
Oh, so there's a plan. Oh, I can't believe I just almost put that out there. There's a plan B for the abortion issue if Roe v. Wade ever tanks.
Yeah, if Roe v. Wade ever gets overturned and it becomes a state issue instead of a federal government issue.
So Planned Parenthood would really have to pack up and go home. It'd be more illegal if Roe v. Wade gets overturned than it is now to have an abortion in Missouri.
Correct.
Wow. I wonder if the anti-abortion pro-life advocates know that.
Well, based on the individual that sent me that revised statute and asked me to read it and to give him my opinion on what it actually says, in my opinion, they're well aware of it. They know it exists.
That's a convoluted mess. You know, someday we will discuss the whole abortion issue here on Culture Vigilante. I know that we don't do a lot of social issues here at Missouri Grassroots, but I'm telling you, pro-life folks, you are right. You're riding down the train tracks in the wrong direction on that one. I just don't understand why they're taking the tack they're taking with it. But I agree with you, Tom. I think that the Republicans will turn out in force because that is a huge campaign issue for Republicans. You can be far left, crazy, wild left Republican rhino, but if you vote the right way on abortion, people think that you are conservative. And if they'll overturn it just for the FaceTime.
Oh, I would agree. And I think in all sincerity, they'll probably also try to overturn House Bill 1132, which was tax credits for maternity homes, food pantries, and pregnancy centers.
Oh, and that was vetoed by the governor? Yeah.
That all tax credit bills were vetoed by the governor. Because they did not compensate in the appropriations process of all this massive reduced revenue that we're going to have because of all this money disappearing. Because the thought process is out there that the whole reason people donate to charities is to get that tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to donate $10 to a charity just so I can deduct $1 off my taxes?
Well, these are Republicans. It's not about the $10 donation. It's about the $10,000 donation.
Well, it's also about what it goes to.
Yeah.
Maternity homes, food pantries. I mean, that's more a left-leaning issue, but let's bring it to the right. And then pregnancy centers, not Planned Parenthood, but the other ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that completely. But I think when you're talking tax tax credits and charitable donations, Republicans are more concerned about their big donors who have the ability to make large donations to the charities than they are about you and I who send in a $10 or $25 check.
Well, true, but even at that, I mean, you're able to deduct a certain percentage of it. So, I mean, if you go and talk to people like Rex Seinfeld or whatever his name is, or George Soros or the Koch brothers, these people don't give money to charities because they get a tax credit. It's not even worth their time thinking about, well, I'm going to give $1 million here because I'm going to get a certain percentage of that back as a tax credit. And if they do think that way, then maybe I need to rethink my way, and then I too can be a millionaire.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not so sure it's about the sink field as it is about those mid-level rich people. You know, you don't have to reach the or attain the level of wealth of a sink field to worry about tax credits for your charitable donations. And I think people do kind of use that as, I think those mid-level people that still make big campaign contributions do make sizable charitable donations for the tax credit. I think they do.
Yeah, they might, but to me that just seems counterintuitive for how they got the money that they earned to begin with.
Well, I don't know. I think it's all about managing the big picture. You know? And why pay taxes on it when you can, and it's, you know, and it's good public relations. You get a tax credit
true.
And a little public relations as well. So, and it's good for their businesses, all of that. Is that about wrapping it up for the bills the House bills this week?
We got one more. It's involving political subdivisions, and one of these days I'm going to figure out exactly when they start wording things in a population basis, which city it directly ties to. and we actually have a member of our committee who does a lot of statewide work who's really good at looking at certain types of these pieces of legislation, and he'll go, oh, that's for such and such a city. But he has been under the weather lately, so he hasn't come to any of the meetings lately. But I'm going to figure out a way one of these days to figure out how it is or which city they're delving into, whether it's a first-class county, second-class, third-class, fourth-class. And then you've got – I know the city not within a county is always St. Louis. But then legislation is specifically earmarked for certain cities throughout the state so they can be able to do something. And this is one of those bills. It's got certain political subdivisions involved in it. It's got nuisance laws also in it. And it's got statewide regulations on the neighborhood associations. And I'm not talking homeowners associations. I'm talking actual grassroots neighborhood associations that the neighbors start, you know, in trying to make their communities better.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's a local level issue. Doesn't need to be a
issue. What are they trying to do?
Well, they're in the bill, they're trying to design the manner in which these neighborhood associations are created.
Really?
And as a former president of the neighborhood association where I live, you know, I didn't need the state of Missouri to recognize the neighborhood association. We got together, we formed a neighborhood association. We did like some neighborhood cleanups. We did some tire cleanups. We went around and tried to help some neighbors who were, you know, didn't have the monies to do certain things, like if their porch was falling in.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to go and, you know, we demoed the porch and then rebuilt their porch and went out and found people who would be willing to donate the lumber, donate time, you know, things that government doesn't need to get involved in. Well, we were already doing that. We don't need the state legislature to determine whether or not that if and when we can do things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, we have a, you know, that whole neighborhood association is a sticky, wicked thing anyway, because And I would agree. I mean, it's the lowest level of government. It's right there in your neighborhood. Then you have your county or municipal government, which really supersedes anything that goes on in your neighborhood association as far as legislating, you know, authority to for building issues and those kinds of things, signage in your yards or whatever. And then I agree, so Nixon vetoed it, and adding the legislature to that mix is just another bucket of worms that you don't need to mess with. So do you think the legislature will override it?
Based on what's in there, it depends on which city it is that was getting the exemptions that are contained in a good portion of that bill. But it's almost like,
Sounds like a political favor.
I know people laugh at me when I say this, that you... The people are doing something that somebody in Jefferson City said, wait a minute, we didn't give them permission to do this. So we need to create a law that gives them the permission to do what it is that they are already doing.
Yeah.
That way it can be looked at, in, especially like in the court system, or in some manner that the state authorized these types of organizations to exist.
Kind of like the police, the campus police situation. And we, you know what, we have got, and am I the only one? But why, I guess I'm the only one that thinks every piece of legislation is being written to be thrown into the courts. That's kind of the way it's looking from my end. It's like they've got a bunch of lawyers sitting down in Jefferson City or wherever they're, Alec, maybe, sending this legislation to the state legislatures in Missouri and across the country, and everything is written to throw it back into the courts, you know, where we have judges decide things so that they can legislate from the bench, I guess.
Well, we can legislate from the bench, but also that we can't do anything unless we are given permission from our imperial government to do it. It's completely opposite. Now, Jefferson penned the phrase that we have rights that are granted to us by our Creator. Life, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Of course, he said among these, and I think in all reality that's the two most important words in the Declaration of Independence. That means there's more than just life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right.
I mean, I have the right, a God-given right, to grow food to feed myself. But yet we had a town down here in southwest Missouri that's between Nixa and Ozark who the mayor decided that he didn't want people to grow gardens in their backyard. So they were going to pass an ordinance that said you could grow flowers or you could grow garden. You couldn't grow both. You had to grow one or the other, and it was only going to be allowed in 10% of the total confined area of your backyard and no container planting.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, Fremont Hills, Missouri.
Did it
pass? Luckily the lady who was dealing with this issue, they were able to get more people to show up at that alderman council meeting, whatever it's called there, to speak out in opposition to than those who showed up in favor of.
Wow.
But
what
it doesn't mean they can rest on their laurels, though, because now that they tried to get it through the front door and it failed, now you have to watch it coming in the back door, and all of a sudden it's an ordinance within that city, and no one will realize that it passed.
I just have visions of little county, you know, county council people running around people's backyards with tape measures, measuring their gardens.
Well, if the city of Springfield ever passes it, I'm in big trouble.
I do not understand. Well, I do understand it, and it's another story for another show. But the attack on this whole, you know, you can't raise your own tomatoes or you grow your own cucumbers or, you know, have your own chickens if you live in a rural area. That, I mean, just people, I wonder if, you know, it's really a very serious problem. It's a hugely serious problem, and most of the people do not understand what's going on right underneath their own noses.
Well, I blame it on Bermuda grass and fescue.
Excuse me?
I said said, I blame it on Bermuda.
Are you smoking it, Tom?
No. I blame it on Bermuda grass and fescue because it's to the point where that's the only thing that is allowed to grow in your front yard is Bermuda grass and fescue, and you have to cut it at 3.5 to 6 inches. You're not allowed to grow the native prairie grasses that look the best when they're about 2.5 to 3 foot tall because that's unsightly. Somebody decided that your lawn in a native prairie grass didn't look as good as their lawn when it was planted with Bermuda grass and fescue, so they started passing laws to get everybody to conform to the same standard.
So there are laws that tell you that you can't grow prairie grass?
Oh, Lisa, have you ever looked up the definition of blight in the state of Missouri?
No, I never have.
Oh, that is a show in the making.
Really?
Oh, yes. Your eyeballs will pop out of your head when you start reading about how blight is defined in the state of Missouri.
Oh, good Lord. Legal definitions. That's what's going to get us on Right to Farm, too. Actually, there was a great article. And let me see if I can pop it up here. I pulled it, actually. Michigan loses the right to farm. And in in the wake of our right to farm constitutional amendment that was on the ballot in August, Michigan residents lost their right to farm this week. This is a new ruling by the Michigan Commission of Agriculture and Rural Development. Gail Filburn of the Michigan Sierra Club told Michigan Live, the new changes effectively remove the right to farm Act protection for many urban and suburban backyard farmers raising small numbers of animals. Previously, backyard and urban farming were protected by Michigan's Right to Farm Act, but the commission has ruled that the Right to Farm Act protection no longer applies to many homeowners who keep small amounts of livestock like chickens. Kim White, who keeps chickens and rabbits, said, they don't want us little guys feeding ourselves. They want us to go to the big farms. They want to do away with small farms, and I believe that is what's motivating it. The ruling will allow local governments to ban goats, chickens, beehives, and on any property where there are 13 homes within 1/8 mile or a residence within 250 feet of a property. So there it goes, folks. It's all about legal definitions, and that's what the argument was against Right to Farm here in Missouri. And obviously it's the argument with blight. And it's just a little tighter.
Now, the argument's going to be that Missouri's Right to Farm was actually a piece of legislation. It was law. It was not a constitutional amendment. That's going to be the argument that's made.
Well, I don't understand, because didn't we not amend the Constitution?
We did. Michigan didn't.
Oh, okay.
Michigan's Right to Farm was actually a piece of legislation. But there again, when government grants you the permission to do something, then government can undo that permission.
Take it away. Right.
And I'm waiting for the court cases in the future that's going to define, redefine, redetermine, reconfigure what it is that a farmer and a rancher can do, what it is that their property has to be, how much property they have to have. I mean, there's already statutes and things of that nature which define farming, but we know how easy state statutes are to change.
Right. And that's what's going to happen. That was the argument against the constitutional amendment in August, was that they're throwing it, like I said a few minutes ago, to the courts. It will be a court case, and it'll be about legal definitions, and pretty soon there will be no tomatoes in anybody's backyard.
And come November, we probably have 4 more constitutional amendments to vote on.
That's right, we do. We should actually have an entire show devoted to that, probably, or at least another good segment about what we're going to be dealing with in November.
I mean, that's, what, 9, 10 in 1 year?
Yeah, we don't abuse that process much, do we, here in Missouri?
Hey, it could be worse. I hear Alabama, their constitution is like 800 pages.
Oh, my God. Well, you know,
so
I mean,
we should be thankful that ours is only like 130.
Well, yeah, and I think that's too big as well. But this whole constitutional amendment process, this ballot initiative process, we abuse it way too much. And rich folks like Rex Sinkfield, who can pay money to put initiatives on the ballot, you know, to go out there and pay people to get petitions to sign, which I think one of well, it's the charter school situation in November that we'll be dealing with, thanks to Rex Sinkfield. Or it's, I'm sorry, the teacher tenure, which is actually related to the charter school initiative, because Rex wants to be a charter school guy. So, well, yeah, we will actually have a show on that, have that segment.
Yeah, and why are we putting teachers, anything to do with the hiring and firing of teachers in as a constitutional amendment?
I don't know, because we don't have enough bureaucracy, I guess.
That's why before we looked at these amendments, we actually went and looked at how amendment was defined way back in the 1700s to come to our conclusions on whether or not we should vote yes or no on the amendments that were already up on the proposal.
What did you come up with?
Well, amend back way back then meant to clarify a position.
Oh.
Which is why there's a lot of people who feel that the 16th and the 17th aren't really amendments because they didn't clarify anything.
No, they just changed everything.
Yeah, they changed. They didn't clarify a position that anyone had a question about.
Amazing. Well, like so many other things in our culture, changing the definition, if you can effectively change the definition of a word or a phrase, you know, you can change history. And, you know, when you're very far, I mean, that is a very effective far left tactic that's been used for generations. You know, they're patient. Change the vernacular. Eventually people, it will become common and mainstream and people will accept it.
Now you got to remember something too. I think and my nieces and nephews, I actually didn't realize it. I should have realized it in my own perspective, but it was lost on me. It wasn't until my nieces and nephews got old enough to start following politics that I discovered that their concept of history does not predate their birth.
Excuse me?
And their concept of history, including my own, it did not predate my birth. I mean, I literally, the school system, there. When you learn history, you're not really learning history. You're learning a condensed value that they want you to learn.
Right.
It was until I got older and started doing a lot of research on my own that I discovered that my concept of history in reality did not predate my birth. I mean, I was there when Carter was president, when Reagan was president. I mean, my history dated back to Nixon, and that was probably it. I wasn't aware of what happened before then, except for what I was taught in the schools. And that's pretty much been whitewashed to make sure that you get a modern-day version of history about the things that they want you to know about.
Right, and from the direction that they want you to read it.
Correct. And most people's ideology, their history, stops when they get to be about six or seven and they can start remembering stuff. That's as far back as their history goes, except for what they've been taught in our governmental education systems, for how it is that they want to direct their education.
We're running out of time.
That's the problem we're dealing with.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We're running out of time. I wasn't paying any attention to the time. You're coming back next week to talk to about the Senate side of the veto session. Thank you, Tom Martz. Thanks to the folks, Ted Trent and company, and to Joe Richardson. And we'll see you next week here on Culture Vigilante, Missouri Grassroots Radio. Talk to you again soon.
God bless. Amen. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.